The Ocean Park Community Podcast, bringing you the history of our neighborhood through stories from residents. You're listening to Part 4, Infrastructure in Ocean Park. We're joined again by Pete, Ed, and Don. Today's topic is the building of infrastructure throughout the history of Ocean Park.
My dad had an interesting background. He was up in the far north for a while, shortly after, in his youth. He came down here, and I guess as a result of that, he didn't like living in cities. And so they decided to move out here when there was nothing very much here, mostly paths instead of roads. He worked for the province newspaper. I think that was the total job he ever had.
Yeah.
And
He's a president of the Ocean Park Community Association.
Yeah, he was president of the Ocean Park Community Association for quite a while. Yeah. And anyway, his job was he was the district manager for the looking after the distribution of papers throughout the lower mainland. And as a result, he was traveling around in his car quite a bit. And that job suited him. He didn't have to go into Vancouver very often. Every once in a while, they would have a meeting and he would go there. But he liked it out here, and so he decided to buy some property and build a house. And we built the house ourselves with help from some local carpenters. That was the only house that we ever had out here. And that would have been built in the 1940s. And we dug our own well. I remember that very well. Living was, for us as kids, was good, was fun. We always seemed to have something to do. And between our times at the beach and the times with our duck hunting and that sort of thing. Wells used to go dry every once in a while, various wells. Some were better than others. So there was a lot of carrying water from one person's place to another, so you'd have water all the time.
How far down did you have to dig foot to reach?
Not very far.
About 15 feet.
It was, I remember the, yeah, that would be a good number.
Down to hard pan.
And you get down into the very hard clay, the hard pan, and that would seem to hold the water all right.
Yeah.
And it would fill up, and it would last most of the year. I remember once...
Did you boil it to drink it then?
No. I remember...
It was pure. It was good. Pure, yeah.
It was very pure. I remember once seeing a snake swimming around in our well.
You used to see drowned rats.
I didn't see
you just dig it out and throw
but
it.
But anyway...
But the water was supposed to come all the way from Mount Baker, underground.
Is that right?
And so that's when a fellow dug a well over by White Rock, far there, and he said that he had it tested, and he was a millionaire over there. Yeah. And that's what they said. It came all the way from there. So all ours probably came from there too.
No, I think he went through a testing procedure
for
the water,
to
see that it was all right and didn't have any contaminants of any sort in it.
And Ginther was going to use it for bottling beer, remember?
Yeah, down on Brown Road.
Brown Road.
28th Avenue,
yeah.
Before we were able to get the electricity hooked up, the power was here, but right after the war, it was very hard to get utilities hooked up because everybody was so busy. And I remember my father, like from his farm days, remembered, and on the back porch of our house, my mom and dad started building a house in 46 after we moved out of town. My father had a couple of old oaken barrels on the roof, and my brother and I, every day, we had what's called a wing pump, and we would have to pump water from the well up into that oaken barrel, and it would supply just gravity feed down to the kitchen for my mom, you know, just for washing dishes. And beside the kitchen stove, there was a great big galvanized tank. And in the side of the wood stove, there was a water heater, and this system would heat the water into the big galvanized tank. And then gravity would force it into the sink for my mom. And I think it was probably close to 1948, and we could see the power pole two lots away from our home, but we could not get electricity.
Yep.
So I can remember the day that the power came in. My father had an electric pump purchased for years, waiting out on the back porch to so we could plumb the house and stuff like that, and have the running water and the electricity on the house.
Yeah. So then you had to wire your houses then, though, right? I mean, once you got power to your houses,
yeah,
you had to wire
yeah,
your
so
houses,
you'd tear the walls apart and have at it, because I remember Mom and Dad doing that.
Yeah.
In fact, when they built the house, they wired it, but they weren't hooked up.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
that's
so
the way
it
that's
had the wiring in it, but
yeah,
then you didn't
and
have
that's the way getting back to the pure water, our well was no more than 50 feet from the outhouse. Because
yeah,
in the early days, you had
yeah,
an outhouse because you didn't have the running water, you know, to supply a proper toilet. And, of course, once the water came in, and I don't think Marilyn and I purchased Mom and Dad's original house in about 1968 or something like that. And I think around there that the sewer came down the road. Am I wrong there, Ed? That with Dawn, that in the late 60s that the sewer was
sounds
finally,
like a good number.
Finally
yeah,
put in, yeah.
Yeah.
So we still...
So you had outhouses up to 1960?
Oh, I'm yeah, going to say the late 60s, yes.
Yeah.
I could be. But they also had, we also had flush toilets here, like the newer homes that went in, but we
there
had big septic fields. We
yeah,
went from an outhouse
to
a big septic field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Three.
And then from that, because once Marnie and I were in the house that we'd purchased in probably 69 or 70, and I remember the sewer had come in, and we had to... dismantle a septic tank and the septic field, and we had to dig the sewer line around the house out to the new, like from the existing bathroom to the new sewer line that went up the street.
Mm-hmm. And Surrey insisted that you fill the tanks up with dirt or something so that...
Yeah, pea gravel.
Pea gravel
yeah,
and stuff like that so nobody mm-hmm, would fall.
Something
and fill in your wells. They may just fill in our wells.
Yes, and there were some deep wells here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At one fire at the foot of 16th Avenue across from Fader's, I was fighting a house fire as a volunteer fireman. I joined at age 16, late 15, and I was 28 years as a volunteer firefighter. Anyhow, I was fighting this fire at a summer home, and the next thing I know, I'm about 20 feet down a well, still hanging onto the hose. And I think to this day, my handprints are probably still in that hose, because that's the only thing that saved my life, and my buddies pulled me back up. And this well was unused because there was old bed strings and bikes down there, and I was all tangled up with this debris down there. Well, in the meantime, the house was still burning.
What about communications at that time, like the phone? Was
telegraph.
Telegraph, yes.
Yeah.
Was there a telegraph office in the building?
White Rock.
Or in White Rock.
Yeah, if you see old pictures, you'll see the telegraph poles going along the beach. They're
yeah,
parallel to the railroad. And
so if you wanted to send a message to someone, you would go to the telegraph office?
Yeah.
They would, did it.
But there were phones here, like...
Yeah, one we had originally.
Yeah, there was one at the corner here, like, Marnie and I were married in 59, and I was a volunteer fire captain at that time, and I remember wanting to get off the party line, so there were obviously party lines by 1959, and I introduced myself as Captain Allenson of the fire department. I never said volunteer, nothing else, just so I said, I need a private line for my home. Well, within a day, boom, I had a private line down there in 15th Avenue. Couldn't believe it, but...
I must admit, the first time I came to Canada, I lived in Lanceville, and I had a party line.
Yeah.
I had never heard of that,
yeah,
but it was quite normal on
yeah,
the island.
Yeah.
Ring once and ring twice, and,
yeah,
and it would
rings, yeah,
it would ring, like when I was on the farm in Mud Bay Flats there, the phone would ring, and I said, oh, Jack, your phone's ringing. Oh, that's R1, we're R2, or something like that. And then you'd pick up the phone, you could hear somebody talking, and then
yeah,
you'd have to hang up.
Yeah.
You know? Oh. First phone we had was in Ocean Park. You had to crank it. And then you say, operator, I want Joe Blow down the street. And they say, okay.
So where would the operator have been, in White Rock?
Central Station. I Newton, probably in those days.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Newton was the center of the world in Surrey.
Oh, was it? Well,
there was Surrey Center over by Cloverdale, and then Newton.
Yeah.
They're probably the older, and then up in Wally.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were the three centers at that time in
yeah,
Surrey, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then phones came in on a regular basis into houses?
In the 50s.
In the
50s.
Late 50s, too, yeah.
Because in 1954, I had started heading north, and I had a job with the Yukon Telephone Company from 57, and we were all automatic phones up in Yukon at that time. So it was here then, so it's hard to say what year they... I remember Mom and Dad having a phone down in the house, and I can't tell you what year it came in, but I do know that it was a party line phone. You pick up the phone, then an operator would answer. You had a number to give them. And as I recall, with the ability of the ringing systems, you could have 10 parties on one line, like 10 telephones on one set of wires going back to the exchange. And on the even side, you would have 0 to 8, and on the odd side, you had 1 to 5, that's how the phone would ring. You would get a single ring, like a ding-a-ling-a-ling, or a ding-a-ling-ding-a-ling, and you would get these, and so you knew it was your phone, yeah. Up until the totally automatic came in, and I don't know that. I know that mine was automatic in 59, so I don't...
Well, I got my first telephone in 56. My dad and mom didn't have it. I had to get it for my work. They had to be able to contact me, so that's, I know it came in about 56.
Typical new construction of homes would be about 1,200 square feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would cost about $8,000.
Yeah.
And that would be in the 1950s?
Yeah.
Like after the war?
Maybe a little before then.
Marnie and I purchased my parents' home that they had built in 1946, and it cost us, it was 1,200 square foot rancher, and it cost us $13,000.
Yeah.
And that would be in 1969 or 1970, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
The Briggs brothers would clear a massive piece of land for you for half of the land. They wouldn't charge you any money to do it, but land was so cheap, and if you wanted to improve your land, say you had 30 or 40 acres, and you wanted a pile of that cleared, they would come in and clear it and remove all
the debris. Or build you a lane or a road.
Yeah,
and
then you would give them half of that land for the work they'd done.
Well, Briggs had all the five corners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the hassles.
And the hassles they had, yeah.
But it was lots of room for businesses because there was nothing here, and you had to have places cleared if you wanted to build a house.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there were some big homes here prior to that, which were summer homes by the wealthy people out of Vancouver.
Yeah.
On Marine Drive.
So, even in here, like around here, there were some mega houses.
Yeah.
Well, Cliff had a huge house.
Yeah.
All along.
And the doctors... Crease Clinic, guy had Crease Clinic.
Yeah, and McGavin's.
And McGavin's Bakery.
And Wright's of Wright's Industrial Ropes and things like that.
Yeah.
McConkey's down in Crescent Beach. Yeah.
They knocked in a whole bunch of roads. They had CKNW out with giving you hot dogs and Pepsis and stuff like that to sell them. They had the prices on the, every lot had a price tag on it.
Yeah.
You could drive down or look at it. And that was the first subdivision. I think there was one, the corner lot down there, we have a semi-view probably by the time we built it. It was only $2,600 for the lot, and you could build a house on it for $12,000. After the war, usually about 1946, 47, and that's when people started to move out. That's when everything grew up and Ocean Park started to get, people were buying lots and stuff. That's when it started. Other than that, they were just summer homes where we were. My house I lived in was a summer home. It just had 2x4s, and it didn't have any insulation and that. So that's the kind of houses that were here. All the wealthy people came up and bought it and built all these huge houses.
One of the earliest houses, the old George Giblin house, still stands today.
Does it?
It absolutely amazes me.
It's called
Stewart's house. Stewart's house, too.
The Stewart's, But I think Gibby's house was one of the first, was it not? In fact, there's three houses down there. What was...
Well, Stewart's house was there when we first moved out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the McKelvey house up on... 14B is still there, back in the bush. It's a big, one of those big three-story houses. So they're original.
Archie's house?
Archie,
Kincaid.
Kincaid, right across from Kincaid. Yeah, his father was the vice president for Shell Oil for Western Canada.
Yeah.
My brother and I grew up, and my younger brother and all three of us, my older brother bought in Amble Green, my younger brother bought in, Harbor Green, and I bought here locally, two houses here. I bought a lot in 1971 or 72, and I paid $12,500 for it. The assessment on it today is $1,969,000, 50 by 100 lot. Nuts.